Welcome to the Savvy Dentist Podcast with Dr. Jesse Green, the show where great dentistry meets great business. Listen in each week as we bring you an inspiring person who will share their story, ideas, and business techniques to help you create a practice and a life you love. And now introducing your host, Dr. Jesse Green.
Hello everyone, Jesse Green here. Welcome back to SavvyDentist.com and to the Savvy Dentist Podcast. It is fantastic to have you here for another episode of the show. Now, I'm super excited to let you know about our latest project, and many of you have heard already, but if you haven't, we have just released the Savvy Dentist magazine. The idea of a magazine has been sitting in my mind for at least, I want to say 6 or 7 years at least, probably longer. And the Savvy Dentist magazine is not like other magazines because it is dedicated exclusively to the business of dentistry. And my thinking around dentistry and business is our operating environment continues to change and evolve. And I really believe that as practice owners, we need to be more sophisticated in how we approach things. We need to have greater knowledge about how we approach things. And we need to be more alert to changing conditions more than any other time. Clearly, we operate in a more competitive environment than at any other time. And having access to knowledge and insights and experience is going to be really key and pivotal to helping you navigate that journey. The magazine comes out quarterly. It's entirely free. The first edition is a digital version. But once we move to edition 2, it's going to be available in print, so hard copy as well as soft copy and digital. And so whether you want the print version or the digital copy, it's entirely free. There's nothing to pay. All you need to do is head across to SavvyDentist.com/magazine and subscribe, and that's yours. It's our gift to you. We hope you find it really helpful. In the magazine, you're going to hear from industry experts around IT. You're going to hear from industry experts around accounting and finance, legal profession, property, fit out, HR, recruitment, marketing, and everything in between. But on top of that, you'll also hear from experts outside of the industry, other business luminaries, other people who are doing great things who we can draw lessons from, draw inspiration from, and apply those lessons and inspiration to our own businesses and really enjoy the levels of success we've always wanted. And so we're really excited to have that available to you as of right now. So please head across to SavvyDentist.com/magazine, grab yourself a copy, hit on the subscription list so we can make sure that comes to you every time we have a new edition. And we are so excited about it. We're really grateful for the kind words that people have sent our way already, and we hope that all of you will find that really helpful in your journey as well. So as I said, just grab yourself a copy and it's there as a gift for you. Now, on to our conversation today. This is perhaps one of the most interesting conversations I've had on the podcast for a long time. I'm talking to Carlos Davidovich, and Carlos has a background as a medical practitioner. He grew up in Argentina. His family obviously comes from Eastern Europe with a surname like he has, but he practiced as a doctor for 20 years, and then he got really interested and fascinated by neuromanagement, understanding neuroscience. He works a lot in business. He's a lecturer and a facilitator of the MBA program at various universities. He's a professor of neuromanagement in that space at the University of New York in Prague in the Czech Republic. He's also actively involved in academics in the academia world in Slovenia, and he's also an executive coach. But what was really interesting about this conversation was understanding why we do the things we do. Not only why we do the things we do, but how our team, and understand why they do the things and our patients do things, and really getting to understand the neuroscience of success. And it was, as I said, it was a thought-provoking, really interesting conversation with Carlos. I get a lot of fun talking to lots of people on the podcast, and this has been up there as one of my favorite interviews ever. It may be because it's the right conversation at the right time for me, but I think this is really relevant to everyone as well. I think this is a really useful conversation. It's incredibly thought-provoking, and it's going to prompt you and provoke you to think more deeply about other things as well. So I think you're going to get a lot of value from this conversation, and I hope you enjoy it as much as I enjoyed recording it for you. So without any further ado, here is Professor Carlos Davidovich talking all about neuroscience, neuromanagement, neuromarketing, and a whole lot more. Carlos, thank you so much for taking the time to join us at the Savvy Dentist Podcast. I've been very much looking forward to talking to you for some time now. Your background is interesting. It's fascinating. The work you do is interesting and fascinating. What a wonderful and interesting life you've had. And I can't wait to explore with you. So thank you for joining us.
My pleasure, and thanks a lot for the invitation, Jess. Really, I'm honored to be in your podcast.
Oh, that's very kind of you, Carlos. You trained as a doctor. You did medical training in Argentina. You've made lots of different career paths over the years. You work in executive coaching. You studied neuroscience. You teach in MBAs. Like there's nothing in your CV that you haven't done. Oh, you've done everything, right? So it's really fascinating. I wanted to ask you a little bit about why you've taken some of those turns. I'm curious to understand the backstory because I always find that's really interesting to understand someone's perspective on life.
I love the question. I need to be 100% honest to you, Jess. If you ask me, did you plan your life? The answer is no. I was just following, I like to say, going with the flow. But that was what life was presenting to me through my career. And I my only credit is I made the decision to follow that path. So I think that in life we need to plan, of course. I mean, but we need to be very open of what is going on there, because not necessarily we know what is our best place to be. What I'm trying to say is I enjoyed practicing medicine. My specialty was internal medicine in that moment. And then I enjoyed a lot of biotech in pharma. But today, what I can say is everything, I would say, put me in my real path. That is what I'm doing today. I'm very grateful to life, or whatever energy you want to call it, whatever name you want to call it, because at this moment I'm able to support people. And based on my, let's say, diverse background, I am able to understand different situations and able to help in a different way. I don't like to use, sorry, the word help. I would say support people's development. And when I say people's development, even though I work as executive coach, so I mainly coach people from companies, there's no way not to talk about personal life. There's no way not to connect with people needs as a human being, because it's all connected. You know, I know that is a cliche, but it's true. That's the point. It's all connected. And it's very important to understand what are the roots of why people are in certain place, and to understand also to help to understand what really they want to do in their life. When I, in this framework of companies, of work, it's easier to approach different needs from my clients. And the reason I got into neuroscience is because today there is a lot of information. Still, there is a long way to go, but it's a lot of information that can explain, I would say, in a rational way, can explain our behavior and our relationship and why we make certain decisions. And that is a language that for me is a doorway when you talk to people from companies, because of course they want to know the whys. And I think it's a fair request. And I'm able to explain the whys. And then we can go to more, let's say, more emotional sides, because in the end, we are emotional beings with a brand new rational software that is still, we don't know exactly how it works. But you know that, I mean, you know as I do that we have a very primitive brain, I mean, all the instinctual one, the reptilian and the emotional, and those are the ones that are leading our behavior. So it's important to understand what is behind, and then we can really, really take a better care of our life. I was going to use the word control, but control has a negative connotation. In this case, I will say to be able to manage your life in a way that will benefit you. That, of course, I don't know if you know, because not too many people know the real definition of the word coach. I don't know if you heard about it.
A coach is really there just to support someone, not so much to mentor them and tell them what to do, but to help them uncover and discover things that they already probably have within them, rather than didactically providing advice.
That is correct. But the let's say the etymological origin, the origin of the word coach, is a Bulgarian word originally. I'm sure that in Australia you have the same thing that you can find in the United States, Canada, or here. Have you seen those big buses, the bus that says coach in the bus?
Yes.
Well, that is the real meaning. Coach is a vehicle that will take you to the place that you want to go. So that is the real definition of coach.
There you go.
And then it was adopted in sport, and then was adopted now as in business or an organization. But the point is just to be that vehicle in the way that knows how to get or help you to get to the place that you want to go. That's not my decision, it's your decision in the end. And that's what I tried to do.
What was it about neuroscience that fascinated you most? Why did that particular discipline capture your attention in the way that it obviously has? And I know you... Not only do you coach, but you have a role in academia as well. You're involved with MBA programs and so on. So what is it about neuroscience and understanding why people do the things that they do? What is it about that that you find so fascinating?
That's a great question. What really catched my attention was at the moment I was able to bridge the world of how the brain works and our external world regarding human behavior.
Mm.
So normally, and I'm very respectful of psychology, we talk about human behavior in the context of framework of psychology. That's fine. But there is more behind this. What I'm trying to say is there are more concrete reasons, things that we can understand even better, or why we connect with people in certain way and not a different way, and mainly to understand what part of myself is leading that conversation. What I mean is, we are evolution was a must, and we are very evolved, let's say, individual as a human being. But to be honest, between you and me, Jess, is we behave in a quite primitive way many times, you know.
Yes.
And now that I know how this framework, I was creating this framework of different brains, I call it five brains, just to explain, mainly to be able to understand in the way we react, in the way we respond, in the way we are affected by our relationship with others. Because in the end, if we want to move forward in our life, we cannot do it by ourselves. So remember that the brain itself is a social organ. And we as a human being, we are social beings. So even though some people, they like to say that they don't like people or they want to be with people, we cannot be without people. So we are social beings. And the interesting part that fascinated me was to start understanding that many, many findings about how the brain works were reflected in the outside world. So I don't know, I don't want to make it complicated, but what I wanted to say is, for instance, I'll give you an example, just because, I mean, you're a dentist, so you will understand perfectly what I'm trying to say, and your audience as well. If you know that the brain cells, the names are neurons, right? The neurons are the brain cell. But a neuron by itself, if I have a neurons, isolated neurons, worth nothing. The power of the brain, it doesn't reside on the cells, resides on the network.
Mm.
The power of the brain is everything about the network, is everything about connection. The power of human beings is everything about connection. It's how we connect to each other. It's how can we support each other and we can move forward connecting in community, in organizations, or whatever. So that model of connectivity happens inside our brain and happens outside our brain. So, and then I start going deeper and deeper, and it's interesting how science was somehow replicating the outside world resembling the way that the brain works. I don't want to make it complicated. Please tell me, okay? Just so what I'm trying to say is, I don't know if you remember that old quote. I mean, as above, so below. No, I mean, it's like as inside, so outside. So if we can understand our inside, and this again is something that we try to do all the time, we can understand better the outside. And I want, and also I understood that we need to be very practical in life, very concrete. I'm not a scientist that will talk about in a deeper way about how each neuron connects with each one or whatever. I it's not my area of interest. My area of interest is how that can be applied in a concrete and practical way in our outside world, in the way we connect with each other. For instance, if you want to give you an example, another example.
Yeah.
You know that today to talk about empathy is a must, right? We need to be empathetic and to connect with people, blah, blah, blah. I mean, totally is correct. But I say it in a funny way, okay? Don't get me wrong, that empathy is overrated. And I tell you why. I mean, because in the brain, for instance, empathy and analytical thinking, they compete with each other all the time. So if we are too empathetic, we cannot analyze properly a situation. Therefore, good leaders, I will say successful leaders, they need to know how to balance a right level of empathy with a right level of analytical thinking, and to know how to, I will say, dance between the two of them. Tell me if I'm explaining myself.
Perfect.
So I need to be empathetic to connect with my people. I need to be, as a coach, empathetic to understand properly what my clients needs, right?
Mm-hmm.
But in one moment, I need to understand to stop that empathy and to start thinking, how can I support and help that person?
Mm.
Because if I stayed in the empathetic side, the only thing I will be able to do is to cry together with you, but not help you.
Yeah.
I don't know if I explained myself.
And
when I understood this connection, let's say in your profession, your profession, of course, I mean, you know that everything around odontology is quite painful, you know, for people. People are quite, that nobody wants to go to the odontology, the dentist. But because it's quite traumatic and we feel, I mean, powerless in a situation when somebody's inside our mouth working, you know, and doing all this now. But, and then the dentist needs to be empathetic. I mean, to get the confidence and the trust of the patient, of the kid, right? I mean, but in some moment, you need to stop being empathetic. You need to do your work. And your work is quite technical.
Yes.
And if you keep being empathetic, you will not be able to do your work because you will be just feeling what your patient is feeling and doing nothing. Makes sense what I'm saying?
Yes.
So in life, it's the same. So that's why I just gave you a very concrete example of knowing how the brain works. Now I understand how we need to manage this, I would say, perfect balance between empathy and analytical thinking. So, and this happens and applies in every realm in life.
I wanted to ask you about interactions of a different sort, balancing empathy and analytical as well, and that is in a team situation where as an organization and as the leader of that organization, you have objectives to achieve, you have outcomes that you're trying to, you know, attain, and at the same time, we can't do those things entirely on our own. We need to learn how to work with people. We need to learn how to bring a team with us. And I think every business owner I've ever spoken to tells me the hardest thing about running their business is people.
Absolutely.
And sometimes it's ourselves that's the roadblock. Other times it's how we interact with our team or indeed our patients or clients, depending on the industry. But I wanted to ask you about the team dynamic as well, because as the leader of the organization, we set these objectives that we want to achieve. And how do we strike that right balance between being an effective leader and achieving goals, but also managing our team dynamics well enough to feel like we're caring, supportive, and getting that balance right. I sometimes struggle with that.
Well, that is a big struggle for all of us. And this is, you just bang on, you know what I mean? What you're saying is the issue. And what you say is one of the, I will say, is one of the secrets of becoming a good leader. I don't know, let's not use the word good, effective leader. That would be a better word. An effective leader needs really how to build trust that people will, I will not use the word follow. I will say will work in a productive way. Yeah. But at the same time, you need to make decisions. You need to set directions that not necessarily will be what everyone will accept or will understand as the right direction. Make sense? So what I'm trying to say is that balance is so important to understand that I need to learn how to, how to activate one or deactivate it to let the other one come up in such a way that that is what characterizes productive and effective leaders. Today, I mean, you know that there are different models of leadership, you know? I mean, let's say more autocratic people that just give orders, I mean, whatever. Today we talk about servant leadership a lot. It's another model. Servant leadership, it doesn't mean a leader that does nothing. It means a leader that will put their team first and will encourage the team to be very proactive and to help, I would say, to take that team to the right place, right? Not making all the decisions, because that's not a good leader. So a good leader is the leader that can allow people to arrive to the right decision. And somehow the best leader is a leader that can use coaching techniques, leading people. But again, if you have written in your head consensus, I will use the word consensus. Mm-hmm. Let's use the word consensus. I'm totally against of the word consensus because it's impossible. Mm. You cannot make everyone happy.
Yes.
You cannot make everybody happy. This is wrong. This has never happened because people are different. But even though you need to set directions on what will be the best decision for the team, for the organization, for the company, for the benefit of the company. That best decision, I will say, and I will be quite extremist on this, will never, everyone will be happy with that decision. But that's not the point. Maybe people will understand later. So as a leader, you need to learn how to involve everyone, engage everyone, giving their opinion, asking for the proposal. But in some moment, you need to make a decision.
Yeah.
So this is where we need to go. And not waiting that everyone will agree.
Mm.
Because you need to involve everyone. But in one moment, you need to be the one saying, this is the direction, this is where we're going, because it's the best for everyone. And not necessarily everyone will be aligned with this at the beginning.
Mm.
Makes sense what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And that's the point against, I mean, again, when we bring empathy and we bring analytical thinking. I don't know if it's clear. What I'm trying to say is that balance is a key component of leadership.
It's very clear, and it's also, it's one of those things, Carlos, that I would say it's simple to understand and hard to execute.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
Intellectually, I understand that, and emotionally, I find it challenging to do.
Absolutely.
My first career out of university was as a dentist in the Navy. And so in military, it's very hierarchical, and you have whoever has the most stripes on their shoulder is the person who's making the decisions. There's not always input from the team. There's often a command and control type of mentality that goes with that. And I think for one reason or another, that kind of leadership seems to have found its way into lots of different areas outside of the military. And so trying to get that balance away from being autocratic to being middle without being too empathetic as well, or indeed going the other way if you're starting from the empathetic side is challenging. One of the questions I wanted to ask you, if I may, is, and I don't know if this is a real word or made up word, Carl, so if you have a better language for it, please correct me. The concept of a highly sensitive person.
Mm-hmm.
I've often been described as a highly sensitive person. Empathy comes pretty naturally to me, but it can also be crippling for decision-making because you do get stuck in that. And so one of the good things about being highly sensitive is intuition, in that you can feel things that perhaps others can't feel.
Absolutely.
I wanted to ask about the role of that intuition in leadership.
Wow, this is a fantastic question. Love it. I tell you something, just to start talking about it. When I was living in Canada, I'm 7 years in Toronto.
Yeah.
I was certified in one assessment. The assessment is called Success Finder. Doesn't matter. It's an assessment of personality.
Yep. Clifton.
That defines 85 behavioral traits.
Yes.
One of the traits is intuition.
Yes.
And in the end, long story short, the guy who did all the research on this found out that the effective and productive leaders are those that are able to use intuition in their career.
Wow.
Intuition is one of the key components of effective leaders.
Wow.
And this is, it sounds counterintuitive, right?
It does.
Exactly. But I tell you just because I love to explain this in the way. We can discuss the word intuition for hours because it's still exactly we don't know what it is.
Yes.
When I see that my client is a leader and intuition is there, I try to encourage this as much as I can. And when they say, okay, but listen, the word intuition sounds touchy-feely stuff. You know what I mean? What do you talk about this? Like, you know, spooky. And I explain in this way. And then I want to talk about the high sensitive personality. It's a different story.
Mm-hmm.
Intuition, this is the way I explain it. And people say, wow, now I understand. Now it's okay.
Mm.
Intuition is the result of a very, very sophisticated algorithm of our different brains. Intuition comes through different path. One is, there are people like you, definitely, that you are very sensitive, and you can register that information that is coming in a way that is avoiding the rational path. Mm. Makes sense what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So you're not doing the rational process to arrive to the conclusion. You just know what to do. Or you know what is the right way to follow, right? Mm. But the truth is, our different brains, emotional, instinctual, irrational, what they are doing permanently since the moment we're born is gathering information.
Mm.
Remember also this, maybe you heard about this. The brain is receiving 11 billion of inputs per second from the outside world.
Yeah.
And we are conscious, the conscious mind only can handle 44.
Yeah.
So will you say, hey, wow, I mean, what's going on with the rest? No, thanks God. Because if we will not have this filter, we will not able to manage such an amount of information.
Yes.
But our brain is able to do it in a non-conscious way.
Yes.
And that information is stored in our different brains. Let's call it, okay, the brain that we have here under the skull. And at the moment that there is a challenge, there is a problem, there is a question, our brain will start trying to find the solution in a rational way, and this is the smallest part of our power, and in a non-conscious way, that is the broadest way that we can work with. 95, some people say 99, 97, doesn't matter. But the biggest amount of work, the brain does it in the backstage, not in the front line. And in one moment, you got their solution. You say, I know what to do. And then people that are too much attached to rationality, they say, but I cannot deal with this information because I don't know how the process went. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I cannot support this. Good leaders, effective leaders, they don't care about this. They say, this information is the way we need to move forward. I mean, this is the way, and I will follow this.
Mm.
I don't care about the rational process. That will come after. But this information is what I really am convinced is the way to go. That intuition came from a very sophisticated, profound process that happened in my different brains. Makes sense what I'm saying?
Yes, makes perfect sense.
So what I'm trying to say is, it's not, I love magic, okay? Don't get me wrong, but it's not magic. It's a process.
Yeah. Yep.
Intuition is a process. And some people like you are more, I would say, aware of listening and understanding and decoding that information.
Mm.
And some people are in denial. They say, no, no, no. If I don't do a rational process, I don't believe. So, okay, fear is behind that, you know, mm-hmm. that sentence.
Yes.
So when you say, I'm a high sensitive person, then, first of all, I love it because we can go to a different conversation.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to go there unless you want. Reality is not what we think it is. Reality is a lot of more complex things, and we have just a small window to see reality.
Yes.
So, because, you know, I mean, we don't listen all the sounds, we don't see all what is out there. So we are quite limited by our senses.
Yes.
So then, but the body itself is not so limited. It's able to receive information, it's able to sense information in a more complex way. And people with high level of intuition, I'm very respectful of that, because it means that you are able to decode information that didn't need to go through a rational process. But it doesn't mean it's not real. It doesn't mean it's not useful. It doesn't mean it will not help you in whatever aspect of your life.
It's very interesting. And what I found in my own experience, and I don't want to make this conversation about me necessarily, because there's plenty of other people who've got far more expertise and experience than me on this. What I have found is that I can't tell you why I think something or feel something. I can just sense it. And someone says, well, exactly. Why? I don't know. I don't know. It's just there. And usually that shows up in a sense of whether someone's upset or not engaged and whatnot. So coming back to the leadership question, because I think, you know, we spoke about making this pragmatic and practical. I guess what I wanted to ask in all of that is I feel like in some ways being highly sensitive is both a pleasant gift, but also a curse.
It's a curse and a gift. Yeah, absolutely. It's a blessing and a curse at the same time.
Totally.
Absolutely.
And for those people that have it, they'll probably understand and appreciate that. But for those that don't have that part of their nature, how do you work with people that do have it? I'm trying to ask about those different dynamics between people who are a bit more sensitive and those that are a bit less sensitive. I guess if I could simplify my question.
I will be very firm and determined on this. People that are not able to decode that area of life, they will not reach higher places in any organization. They can't. In the ladder of leadership, okay, higher you are, there are two components that always you will need to face. You will be lacking all the information because it's impossible to have all the information.
Yes, yes.
Because, you know, leaders, CEOs or whatever, C-level, they are experts on one thing, not on everything.
Yeah, yeah.
They need to make a decision about everything.
Yeah.
So you never have the whole information. And second, you don't have time. So lack of time and lack of information, the only way to solve that riddle is with intuition. And more experienced you are, your intuition will work way better because it's more information inside. And more sensitive you are, you will be able to decode better that information. Make sense? So that's why I tell you, it's funny because when I talk about intuitions and at the beginning, when I started talking about this, I was like, I'd say, okay, people would tell me that I'm a touchy-feely guy, whatever. I am, but that's a matter. It's not the point. So, and never after, I don't know, 20 years, never a leader told me, I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, they get it.
It was exactly the opposite. People come to me in a coaching session or after the presentation, I say, I know what you're talking about. My team did all the analysis about certain problems, let's say, and they say, we need to go right. And I know that the direction is left, not right. So, and I know that we need to go to exactly the opposite place. And they ask me why, and I don't know how to explain that. and then I say, don't worry, don't try to explain it. Because the source of that information is not connected with the alphabet. You cannot explain it. Don't worry. But you need to follow that because it's based in many, I would say, it's based on your ability to receive information from sources that are not limited by our rational brain. That's quite limited, by the way.
Yeah, really interesting. What I'm curious to ask about is you've mentioned that the upper leaders, the people at the upper end of the leadership ladder, have certain qualities, one of which is, you know, being able to use their intuition and sense those things.
Yeah.
What are the other qualities that you've observed? You've worked with lots of people in the C-suite. You've worked with really high achievers, you know, your whole life.
Yeah.
What other traits do you see them possessing?
Let's go there. Is more experienced in working life is better? The answer is yes, but it's not enough.
Mm.
It's not about experience. Today, all the information you would like to know is in Google.
Yeah.
So it's everywhere.
It's everywhere.
It's not to having too much information. It's knowing what to do with that information. So the right combination of intuition, and I will put intuition first because you brought it up and I think it's very important. Intuition plus two other components, analytical mind, so that you can analyze things, and common sense. That is so difficult.
Yeah.
Because common sense will be guiding you not to go to the wrong path. You know what I mean? Because sometimes really you need to make quite difficult decisions.
Mm-hmm.
But you need to learn how to put all those decisions through certain filters. Again, intuition is very important. Do you feel that is the right decision? I always ask that question to my client. Do you feel? And they say, yeah, this is the way. And I already know that if they feel that, there is a lot of, I will say, support behind, and that's the reason that feel to go that way. The second question is, okay, once you have the information, did you do enough analysis of it? Because sometimes, I mean, you need to add more components. And the third one, do you think is what your common sense says about this? But in that order, what I mean, intuition goes first. So, and then, okay, then let's do, give me the information that comes from intuition, and then we can analyze, let's say, how to do it, how to implement it, or what would be the best way to put things in place. Make sense? But those are components that are very, very important. Empathy is, I would say, is one of the ingredients in the salad, you know, that needs to be there. But again, higher in the organization or when the organization is quite big, you cannot take care of everyone. This is impossible. And sometimes the decision, okay, so let's say the company decides to shrink, I mean, to reduce the number of people. Okay, let's do it with an empathetic component. But if that is what the company needs, you need to do it.
Mm.
And not everyone will be happy, of course. But if you need to do it in the nicest way possible, but you need to do it. Makes sense what I'm saying? So you need to be determined on your decision. And you need to be mindful that people will be affected. So let's help them as much as you can, but it's impossible, again, to arrive to 100% consensus.
It's really interesting, isn't it? Because I think there's a whole bunch of things in there. And we just spoke for a moment about common sense.
Yeah.
There's an expression, I'm sure you've heard it, or a question perhaps, why is common sense so uncommon?
Absolutely.
And so I wondered if there's a neuroscience explanation of common sense.
Is it good? Common sense, again, is a blessing and it's a curse at the same time.
Yeah.
Common sense is what will make you feel that you're making the right decision.
Yes.
Because it's not affecting in the wrong way to many people. It's a common sense to do. But at the same time, could be a limiting factor.
Yes.
Limiting factor if we need to introduce something that is very innovative.
Mm.
Because common sense and innovation, they are not good friends.
No.
So what I'm trying to say is common sense is great for a daily, managing life. But sometimes if you need to introduce something that is really, really outside the common sense, because it's very innovative, in that moment, you need to download the volume of common sense and you need to go with that. So people, if we are not still living in the cave time, that was due to people that were innovative, people that were not okay with the status quo,
yeah.
People that were not okay with the common sense of that moment. So I know, I'm mindful that at this moment, I'm complicating the conversation because common sense can be useful in certain level.
Mm.
But if you need to cross the line and to introduce something that is really goes out of the common sense and you need to do it, that maybe is the only way to survive.
Mm.
So I will add one more component now. The other day, I was asked for another podcast. There was a guy from Canada. And he leads a podcast called the Atypical Leader,
mm-hmm.
because he was a profound, now we call it neurodiverse personality. You heard about the concept?
Yes. Yes, I'm familiar.
Okay. So he was very affected by things that we used to call it a spectrum, autistic spectrum, ADHD, dyslexia and all this stuff. But he was able to become a very successful leader, despite all these limitations.
Yes.
And in the conversation, in one moment, I told him, listen, if we are not still living the cave time, it's thanks to atypical leaders, people that were not fitting in the normality, normality is. Somebody that was thinking differently, somebody that was feeling differently, somebody that were not okay with the status quo. So if you analyze those three parameters and you compare with common sense, we have a problem.
Yeah.
Yeah. But if you understand when is the moment to stop one and to let the other rise, then you can move forward with creative solutions, with something that you need to try. It's trial and error in life. And if you have a different idea that will not fit into common sense, so be it. Just go. That was the only reason. It makes sense. I don't want to make it complicated. Just want to. We are adding pieces of the puzzle here. You know? Okay. So because now I added the piece of the innovation or creativity. Let's call it innovation because innovation is the practical application of creativity. Yeah. And innovation needs to break the common sense, needs to go against common sense. So again, a good leader are those people, good leaders, that can manage all these components in a balanced way.
It's really interesting to talk about creativity in the context of innovation as well. And
mm-hmm.
I'm curious, and again, in dentistry, you know, how we run our businesses, requires a degree of creativity, but maybe not like designing a new iPhone creativity, but creativity in how we approach our day-to-day work. I wanted to ask you about creativity, whether it's innate or can be nurtured. And I'm not sure what the answer is. Is that genetically programmed that some people are more creative than others? Is it a skill? Is it a gift? What is it? Carlos, I'm not quite sure what the answer is.
It's a combination of things.
Yeah.
One of my workshops is about growth mindset.
Yes.
And maybe you heard about the concept, you know, growth mindset,
yes.
And fixed mindset.
Yep.
And I like to present it in the following way. All of us are gifted. No, it's not true. Do we know what our gifts are? Many times we don't because we didn't try.
Mm.
We didn't try means, can I do everything well in my life? The answer is no.
Mm.
Can I try everything in my life and see how can I do it? The answer is yes.
Mm.
Can I be the best on, let's say, I don't know, playing tennis, to say something? Can I be Nadal or Federer or these people? The probability is low because I don't have those conditions. Can I be better than myself every day I practice? The answer is yes. I'm adding one more component here. And always, that's the way I start the workshop. The question is, what is the limit of the brain? That's it's a tricky question, of course. The answer is limitless. We don't know. So it doesn't mean it has a limit, but we don't know. At the moment that we are dealing with an organ, our brain, that we don't know what is the limit, don't tell me you cannot do it. Tell me that you were trying and didn't work. That's okay.
Mm.
But don't tell me you cannot try.
Okay, so that's really powerful. Ladies and gents, if you've just heard that, I think that's something you better write down, because I think that's really very, very profound. If we understand that the brain is limitless, you can't say I can't do it. We can just say I tried it and that didn't work, and so I can try again. I can try something different. I can do the trial.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
So but don't tell me, you tell me you can't. You don't tell me you don't have the gift. We don't know.
I just want to ask you about how neuroscience shapes marketing. I want to ask you a little bit about how we receive messages, how we act on messages, why we do the things that we do as consumers, how we can be aware of what those marketing strategies are trying to do to us.
That's fantastic.
And equally, to play the other side of the coin as well, what can we incorporate into our own marketing ethically and all the right reasons, of course, but how can we motivate our patients to take the actions that we want them to take? Let me just back up for a second. You made a really good point a moment ago that there's no shortage of information. We can jump onto Google and find anything we want to find out.
Yeah.
We know that to prevent dental disease, we need to have good oral hygiene habits. We need to have good home care. We need to eat a balanced and healthy diet.
Yeah.
All of those sorts of things. Similarly with, you know, general health and well-being, we need to exercise and not eat so much and all the rest of it. And yet we have an obesity problem. We also have dental disease is a largely preventable disease.
Of course.
And yet why is it that people don't act on the knowledge that they know? What stops people taking action on what they know?
I love it. Oh, my God. Okay, we have another hour.
Sorry, Carl. I know. These are questions that interest me and fascinate me.
Okay, let's take it by pieces, okay, because you brought many, many very interesting questions.
Yes.
Number one, it doesn't exist 100% rational buying decision.
Yes.
It's impossible. The brain is not prepared for that. In the same way that the brain is not prepared to make a 100% rational decision in general, a buying decision never, and I use the word never, that is quite strong, never is a rational process, never. Marketing, I don't teach marketing, I teach neuromarketing. That is to understand why your client will buy you instead of your competitor. In other words, is to learn how to recognize what is the real motivation. Stop teaching people a new diet because they will keep being obese because they don't want to go to diet. It's not about a different diet. It's about what is the motivation of that they don't do it. Why they don't do it? We can bring psychological issues, whatever. You know what I mean is the motivation factor is the driver. In neuromarketing, what I work with during all these 40 or 60 hours that I teach is to understand the real motivation of the product, what the product produces. I give you an example. Do you know what Starbucks is selling? Because Starbucks doesn't sell coffee. This is important to understand. There are many, many, many sources of coffee. Don't tell me that Starbucks is selling coffee. Starbucks is selling what they sell. Is called a transitional experience.
Okay.
From your house to work and vice versa, you go to a place, Starbucks, that looks like a living room of your house.
Yes.
So then the transition between your work and your house will be more smoothly, and you have the feeling to be in a place that is partly as your house and partly is your work. Makes sense? So they sell the experience of being there, not coffee.
Hmm.
What MasterCard is selling. MasterCard is not selling what can you buy with a car. The focus of their promotion is what can you get that is priceless.
Priceless, yeah, the experience.
The experience. something that you cannot buy with a credit card, but you need the credit card. Okay, that's a trick. But what are you getting thanks to the credit card? Not the product, the experience that is priceless. Domino Pizza. I don't know if it's in Australia, Domino, but it's everywhere.
Yes, it is, yes.
Domino Pizza is not selling pizza. It's selling speed, that you can get it in 20 minutes. If not, you don't pay. So what I'm trying to say is, it's never about the product. It's about the impact of the product in your life. And that is what I teach in neuromarketing. Coca-Cola is the company that spends more money in the world in marketing. Coca-Cola is totally counterintuitive. So is Coca-Cola selling Coke? No. What Coca-Cola did lately, connecting the product with happiness. And they created the foundation of happiness all over the world. That when you see a Coke, you will think about happiness. It's not about Coke. It's never about the product. It's what the product, how the product will impact on you from the emotional point of view.
It's really interesting. I've been reading a lot about Harley Davidson motorcycles recently.
Oh, funny. Okay.
Another good brand that sells, you know, in one sense, motorcycles, but what they're really selling is, I guess,
experience.
Feeling like I'm tough in my black leathers driving down the road, right? And I know that there's a community around Harley Davidson riders as well, and they're probably selling some elements of community, I suspect, as well.
Totally.
Interesting.
But just not only that, one of the chapters I teach in neuromarketing is brands and religion. Every single religion in the world has 10 components. And to give you an example, I mean, normally there is a secret, there is something, there is a sacred book, let's say, you know, there are many. There also is the feeling of community. There are 10. I cannot name it right now, but there are 10.
Yes.
What we work in the neuromarketing class is to identify products that they share this component, that they behave like a religion. Harley Davidson is one of them that feels almost the 10 buckets of religion.
It's fascinating.
It's fascinating.
I'm actually reading about cults and brands at the moment as well, and the similarities across cults and brands. Ooh. It's interesting. It's really fascinating.
It's fascinating. I mean, the feeling of belonging, for instance, is one. The feeling of belonging. And I'm a Harley Davidson guy. I belong to the community of Harley Davidson. And many others, you know, there are many products, or Louis Vuitton, I mean, all the high-end brands, for instance.
I wanted to ask you about Starbucks for a moment, because I think that's a really interesting case point.
Yeah.
You said it's this transitional experience. It's easy to be wise after the fact, but was that created by design initially, or was that a happy coincidence?
I love that. I don't have the answer, to be honest, because it was created by a guy from Austria, Starbucks. What he says is that he was from Europe, you know, from Austria, and he was in the United States, and he hated the American coffee. He hated it.
I understand that.
And he wanted to bring the European coffee experience to the United States. That's what he said.
Yes.
So then that you can have a coffee in the European style. For that was not only to make a good coffee, it was also to take the coffee, to drink the coffee in a nice place, more homey place.
Yes.
So that was his idea. If he was thinking about all the consequences, I cannot tell you. I don't know.
It's very clever. Carlos, you've been incredibly generous with your time today, and it's been an incredibly fascinating, thought-provoking conversation. If we were to try and construct some themes, I don't necessarily think there's going to be, you know, three silver bullets or three magic pills. I don't think that. But I guess what I wanted to leave the audience with was some further thinking or some things to consider as they go about their day-to-day. What would be the areas that you would think that is worthy of exploration and deep thought?
Accept. And I use the word accept, not understand, to accept that we are mainly emotional beings, no rational beings.
Yeah.
The problem is that the word emotional has a negative marketing. We use it in a negative way. When we say somebody's emotional, we are saying you're not managing your emotion. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is emotions are everywhere. So if emotions are everywhere and are driving our life decisions, our buying decision, I think it's enough motivation to learn how they are affecting myself, to learn how can I understand and deal with my emotions in a better way. That will make a huge difference in my life. It's not becoming emotional. It's not touchy-feely stuff what I'm saying. I'm saying, A, be mindful who is talking from you, that you're not being so rational as you think, that you will use your rational mind. You need, because that's the reason that we are talking now from Australia to Madrid, thanks to the rational technical development. But at the same time, as a human being, still we have one component that is leading all our behavior and is more connected with emotions than with the rational thinking. I don't know if that is useful. I can keep going.
I think it's incredibly useful, and I think it's incredibly powerful. I think it's useful in lots of different ways. It's useful in terms of our interactions with our team. It's useful in terms of interactions with our patients, understanding that we're coming from a place of emotion, they're coming from a place of emotion, we're all coming from that place. But I think it's also really important to know thyself and to be aware of what's driving our own behavior. You know, maybe I'm coming from a place of fear or frustration. Maybe that's why I'm communicating the way I'm communicating. Maybe it's why other people are communicating the way they're coming, or maybe they're coming from a place of hope and aspiration or whatever it is that's driving that. I think being aware of that is really powerful. And I think what's really powerful about that, coming back to the very beginning, Carlos, is if we're going to achieve objectives in our personal life, in our business life, we need to be able to work with other people. So understanding that fundamental piece, I think, is really powerful. So thank you. I appreciate that.
No, my pleasure. Really my pleasure. And thanks a lot for your invitation. I really enjoyed it.
Carlos, this has been a really fun conversation. So thank you for making it so fun for me. I have to tell you, Carlos, really quickly before I let you go, the thing that you're probably familiar with, that work of Simon Sinek's Start With Why and all those sorts of things. And my greatest pleasure in life is to have interesting conversations with interesting people. And this conversation absolutely meets those criteria. So thank you so much for the work you do.
My pleasure. Thank you
so much for sharing. I'm really appreciative.
No, of course. My pleasure. And still we didn't talk about you as a high-sensitive person, but we can talk it another opportunity.
We can pick that up another time. Thank you very much, yeah. Carlos.
My pleasure. Really my pleasure. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Savvy Dentist podcast. For more episodes, go to drjessegreen.com/savvydentist. And to discover how to build a high-performance dental practice, visit drjessegreen.com and download the free report.